Is that good? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Joe. I'm a crystal meth addict and an alcoholic. How's everyone doing tonight? I know you're not going to answer me, but I'm just speaking to myself. So we are on the second half of step two, we agnostics. We're going to wrap that up tonight. And I'm actually very eager to hear people share tonight on the homework assignment. Because I think the homework assignment that Tyler gave last week was an awesome assignment. Looking at if God is everything or God is nothing, and these ideas of God in my life, and how can God fix, what's God's idea to fix personal relationships? What's God's idea to fix emotional nature? You know, what's God's idea to fix my unhappiness? You know, and these things, I want to hear from you guys and what you got from that and got from your homework assignment. Because I think there's a lot of power in that.
Mm-hmm.
And you did such a great job last week, Tyler. I really loved it.
Oh, thanks.
And going over just a few points before I get started, just to get centered in where I'm at, looking at, because I revisited while I'm studying the chapter, my own honest doubt and prejudice, you know, and looking at the ideas that I came in here and even the ideas coming into the program. So like I've come into the program as a newcomer. And that didn't know anything about the program. And then I've come to the program as someone with time, you know, and going back through these steps. And people have impressed upon me their ideas of God and the doubt and prejudice that has come up still, even though I've been sober, looking at things like I have to be good to get God's love. You know, that I have to pray a certain way. I have to meditate a certain way. I have to act a certain way in the rooms. I can't show my emotion. You know, these things that come up for me, honest doubt and prejudice still, going back through the work and seeing how am I relating to newcomers? You know, that's how I want to look at it, is how am I relating to a newcomer? Am I meeting them where they're at, or am I trying to impress upon them something that I felt was pressed upon me, you know? And I don't want to be there, you know? I want, the thing I liked most about this chapter and this program is that it allowed me to go at a pace. It allowed me to go with my own conception. It allowed me to be free to believe, to pray, to do it how I needed to do it, the way I needed to do it. You know, I didn't have to have another's conception of God, although I did need their help, you know. And what got me to the place of step two is a first step experience. And going to the Big Book Awakening, the first step experience in here, it propels me through all the steps. And you'll see how the steps build on each other, and they build. And the first step builds me up to be ready for the second step. And the second step will build me up for the third step and onward. But everything is based on the first step experience. And the experience I had through the work will propel me through the rest of the steps. And if I'm having a problem in a step, it's usually based upon my first step experience. And that's why we lasted so long in the first step. And that's why it's such a grueling first step experience, because it should get me to a place where I come to this easily. I come to this idea that I need to believe in God. I come to this idea that I'm willing to go for this power based on a first step experience. That alcohol was the great persuader. You know, it beat me into a state of reasonableness here in this chapter. And I never really had a problem with God. What I had was a problem with my ideas of God. What I had a problem with my perception and my conception of this power and how it was in my life. Because all I had growing up, my experiences was I prayed not to be gay. And I was gay. You know, I prayed that my parents wouldn't break up. You know, he left, you know, dad left, you know, and as a kid, you know, and we were Jehovah's Witness. My mom, here's a little tangent, but my mom became Jehovah's Witness because they knocked on her door and they asked her if their kids ever asked her about God, what would she say? And she freaked out. So she wanted to start studying. And so she got us into the truth, you know, which is the Jehovah's Witness religion. And I was going to be the best darn Jehovah's Witness I had to be, you know. So here I am going door to door and doing what I had to do just to be the good Jehovah's Witness. And like, I'm giving talks and like, you know, doing... Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
I heard something, sorry. So I'm giving all these talks and doing what I had to do. And then I felt like the religion turned on me. But anyway, that was my experience with God, you know, and that was early on. So the evidence I had up to that point in my life was God's a joke. You know, this whole stuff is a scam. And then I left it at that, you know, and then I fell into drugs, and then drugs became my God, because that was who we rely on. We call God, and I relied on drugs for a long time. Okay. The point behind all that is I start seeing my honest doubt and prejudice here in the rooms. And I start going back to this chapter and seeing what's real for me now today, and how am I interacting with newcomers in my life? And am I bringing them to this power, or am I bringing them what I think that they should have? You know, I'll get into that more later. So we are going to start on 51. We're at the top. First indented paragraph, we agnostics. All right. I'm actually going to read the paragraph before, because I really like that paragraph. I don't want to get centered in it. It says, here are thousands of men and women. I'm at the bottom of 50. Worldly indeed, they flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power and to do certain simple things, there's been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. Now we're going to answer this question. We're going to answer a couple questions in this chapter here. We're going to find out what that attitude is on 55. And we're also going to answer the question on 45 that said, just where and how are we going to find this power? We're going to answer that question as well on 55. And then there's another question, which is God is everything or God is nothing. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements, the rest of the steps. Once confused and baffled by the seemingly futility of existence, they show the underlying reason why they were making heavy going of life, leaving aside the drink question. So we're leaving aside the drink question completely now. Like, we're looking at my life here, unmanageability, and the spiritual malady of my life and the way I'm living. Here. My drinking problem is my living problem. And I think Tyler mentioned this last week. There's no difference between the two. So stop going to meetings and saying, oh, I don't have a drinking problem, I have a thinking problem. Or I don't have a drinking problem, I have a living problem. Because my thinking and my living will get me back to a drink. The drinking is never off the table. Using is never off the table. And people die and commit suicide behind the idea of, I'm going to stay sober. I can't drink no matter what, you know? And then I'm living this life with no God, I can't drink no matter what, I got nothing. There's this limbo place that I live in, and people die in that place. It's a very sad place to be, you know? This, I can't go for God, but I also know I can't drink and use no matter what. And so what the fuck am I supposed to do here? And they off themselves, you know? My drinking and my living problem are the same. It says, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. Now, I'm going to acquire faith, and this is why I wanted to read this, because my little faith story. I'm going to acquire faith in the program in God, the same way I acquired faith in drugs. Faith is the result of results. I got results from drugs, and I knew when I used them that I was going to get something from them, and I had faith in them. Same way I had faith in a mechanic. So my grandpa told me about this mechanic, right? His name is Pedro. Real story, he's a real mechanic. And based on a belief that my grandpa told me, he said, so I had to take my car to the dealership and they were gonna charge me an arm and a leg, you know? And I'm like, I can't afford it. So he says, go to Pedro. Pedro's a good mechanic and he'll fix it for cheap. I say, okay, I'll go to Pedro. So based on a belief, I took some action and I took my car to Pedro. Pedro fixed my car up at a really good price and did a really good job. I didn't have any problems with it after that. Then when a problem did come up, I took it back to Pedro. I now have faith in that mechanic, you know? So now whenever a problem happens with my car, I'm taking it to Pedro because I got faith in Pedro because I know what he does and I know how much he does it for, and he does a really good job, okay? This is the same way I'm going to acquire faith in this God, right? Faith is a result of results, but I got to get results. And I might not have those results here. Right now, what I'm face-to-face with, I know we're going to be face-to-face with the question of faith, but I'm face-to-face with my drug and alcohol problem, you know? That's what I'm face-to-face with right now, all right? It says, this world of ours has made more material progress in the last century than in all the millenniums which went before. Almost everyone knows the reason. Students of ancient history tell us that the intellect of men in those days was equal to the best of today. Yet in ancient times, material progress was painfully slow. The spirit of modern scientific inquiry, research, and invention was almost unknown. In the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought around Earth preposterous. Others came near putting Galileo to death for his astronomical heresies. We ask ourselves this. Are some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as the ancients were about the realm of the material? So the material world used to be, now, today people will stand up for science over anything. and the spirit world is questionable. Before, a long time ago, it was the opposite. You know, people put, they were gonna lock up Columbus. They thought he was crazy because he thought the earth was round. And Galileo almost got put to death. I believe he believed that the planets revolved around the earth, but they found out it revolved around the sun, but they almost put him to death for that. You know what I mean? And the realm of the material had superstition in it. And they're asking me, am I not just as biased as the ancients were about the realm of the material, about the realm of the spirit? And I look at that and I say, yes, I am. You know, I still have questions about it because I don't really have any experience with it. At this point in the work or coming into the program, I didn't really have much experience with the spiritual way of life. You know, I had a lot of experience with the drug life, but not much experience with the spiritual way of life. And it was questionable, right? All right. Even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid to print an account of the Wright brothers' first successful flight at Kitty Hawk. Had not all efforts of flight failed before? Did not Professor Langley's flying machine go to the bottom of the Potomac River? Was it not true that the best mathematical minds had proved man would never fly? Had not people said God reserved this privilege to the birds? Only 30 years later, the conquest of air was almost an old story and airplane travel was in full swing. They didn't want to print it. They flew and the newspapers didn't want to print it because they didn't want people to know about it because they said God reserved that privilege to the birds. But in most fields, our generation has witnessed complete liberation of our thinking. Show any longshoreman a Sunday supplement describing a proposal to explore the moon by means of a rocket, and he will say, I bet they do it. Maybe not so long either. Hell, look at Amazon and what's that car company? Sheesh, they're building rockets and flying them up. Pretty soon we're going to be able to just pay a fee and go fly up to the moon and back for a little trip.
Tesla,
thank you. Yeah, that's right. They can't pay their employees, but they can make rockets. I shouldn't have said that. That's bad. Take that off the recording.
We can't. This is recorded. It's okay. You're just being Joe.
So. I know. All right. Is not our age characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas for new, by the complete readiness with which we throw away the theory or gadget which does not work for something new which does? And I don't know about you, but I have updates on my phone all the time. This version doesn't work anymore. I'm going to update it to this version. This phone doesn't work as good as this one. I'm updating it to this. Now they're telling me that this God is going to be an update in my life. And I'm going, hold on a minute. I don't know about this God app. I don't know if I want to upgrade to this God thing just yet, you know, but any other gadget is no problem. You know, I start to see this, what this chapter does for me is it starts pulling out my agnosticism, you know, it starts pulling out the ridiculousness that's in my mind. Because really there's still a level of insanity inside me, even sober. There's a level of insanity that's going on with me because I don't have any other options here. I have no leg to stand on here. I've seen it with my first step. I have nothing else for me. Yet I'm still going to bring up these excuses. I still have prejudice. I still have doubt. And to me, there's a level of insanity there that I have to get in touch with. That it's insane for me to not want to believe than to believe. It's insane for me to want to go along with the idea that I can still do the job myself, over the idea that maybe there's something else there that can help me. Now we're gonna get into the bedevilments. So this is like the homework assignment was with this. And I'm gonna read the paragraph after the bedevilments first for the ideas. It says, when we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. So I look at the bedevilments in the spirit of, is God everything or is God nothing? And I look at these ideas of, what are my ideas surrounding these bedevilments? Now, when I looked at my ideas, I could start to see what I do, okay? What are my ideas to fix my personal relationships? The things that I do to fix my personal relationships, I run from them. I tell them how they need to be, you know? I'm looking at this stuff. I have a list of it actually here. I'll read just a couple of them, just a couple of them for you. Like when it comes to personal relationships, I get in and out of relationships, whether they fit for me or not. Like Tyler was talking about not too long ago, this one's smothering me, this one's paying too much attention to me. I gotta get out of this one, gotta get into this one. I frequent them, you know? I tell others they need to change for me to be okay and to feel okay. I go to them empty and expect a lot from them. This is what I do in my relationships, and this is real. This is my idea of how I'm gonna fix relationships, is I'm gonna fix them on the outside. Because see, there's still a part of me with all these ideas that doesn't get that the problem's in me. All right. We looked at the problem with the drinking, with the physical and the mental. The book took us from outside of me to inside, to the deepest part, to the inside of the body, physical craving, and inside the mind for the mental obsession. And now we're looking at the deepest part of the spiritual malady inside, right? But there's still this part of me that has these ideas of how I'm going to fix my life. And I still think I can fix the external to fix the internal. And it shows up in this list, and it's going to show up even more in the fourth step when I see it in my fourth column, you know, because a lot of the things I'm writing here are my ideas of how I'm going to fix these things. I'm going to fix my emotional nature by avoiding certain things. I'm going to fix my emotional nature, my jealousy, by telling him, my partner, what he can and can't do, because certain things make me jealous and I know what they are. So I'm going to fix that thing on the outside to fix me on the inside. Does that make sense? So I'm going to start seeing this. And I'm going to see it more in inventory and my selfishness and my self-centeredness in the fourth column of how I'm playing God in my life, how I'm fixing me, the ideas that I have to fix me. And what this is, this list that I have made, is my agnosticism, right? It's agnosticism. It's, I don't really believe that there's a God that can work here in my life. So I have to do it. So I have to be the one to fix it. And how am I going to fix my unhappiness? I'm going to have more sex and eat more. You know, that's what I do. That's real. That's what I do to fix unhappiness. How do I fix my feeling of uselessness? I talk shit about people to make myself look more important. That's what I do. At work, I gossip more. Or I gather allies and I feel I have this false closeness of a relationship with people by talking shit about someone else to make them look useless and I look more powerful and useful. And that's how I fix that feeling of uselessness, you know? So that's how I'm working on the bedevilments in my life on a real level, even now today. That's what I do. And sometimes I do it seemingly without even knowing that I'm doing it, right? Because this agnosticism is going to crop up and I have myself acting out in ways that I don't even know it's agnosticism until I go through the work and get my ego smashed, because I can't really smash my ego on my own. It's like saying I know the day it's going to look like that I drink again, because my ego will take me out. It's like saying, oh, I'm going to work on my ego as soon as it gets too big, and then I'll know what that day looks like, and then I'll just fix it before I have more problems. It doesn't work that way. I go through this process of the work, and it's like an ego smashing process, right? And I see this through the process of the steps. So we had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same willingness to change our point of view. We're having problems with personal relationships. We couldn't control emotional natures. Now, if God is nothing in my personal relationships, what are my prospects for the future for me? All right. If God is nothing, and I have no more power than what I've come here with, what are my prospects with my emotional nature? All right. We are prey to misery and depression. If there is no God and I'm God, what are my prospects for the future here with misery and depression, with the feeling of uselessness, with being full of fear, with being unhappy? We couldn't seem to be real help to other people. If there is no God, what does my future look like here, right? So before I answer that question, which this homework assignment is beautiful, before I ask the answer the question on page 53, I look at this. I look at the sea, like, what are my ideas here? And then I ask, what are God's ideas here for me? And then I'm going to answer the question on 53. And I'll get there in just a minute. I'm going to keep reading. Wasn't a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. When we see others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. And if my ideas are working here, then fine. But I have to ask myself, is it really working? You know, can I go further? Am I really happy in all these areas of my life? You know, and I'm not. The Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build the machine with would fly was the mainspring of their accomplishment. Without that, nothing could have happened. We agnostics and atheists were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems. Stuck. I'm just stuck. I'm stuck to it. When others show us that God's sufficiency worked with them, we began to feel like those who had insisted the Wrights would never fly. Logic is great stuff. We liked it. We still like it. It is not by chance that we were given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses, and to draw a conclusion. I'm powerless. This is one of man's magnificent attributes. We agnostically inclined would not feel satisfied with a proposal which not does lend itself to reasonable approach, step one, and interpretation, step two. Hence, we are at pains to tell why we think our present faith is reasonable, why we think it is more sane and logical to believe than not to believe, why we say our former thinking was soft and mushy when we threw up our hands in doubt and said we don't know. So, faced with my alcoholism, my unmanageability, you know, I see it in my life. I've seen the first step in my life. I see people in the program tell me, they just said that there's 100 people said the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important factor of their life, that relying on this power has solved their problems, you know, all of their problems. And here I come into this program broken. I came in here broken. I mean, like broken. Like you had a piece of broken glass and you broke it some more, like like that's how I came in here, like with nothing, you know. And then they tell me that this power can help me and save me, and not, it's simple belief, and I still have stuff that comes up. Well, maybe, you know, maybe I don't know about that, you know. Well, I'm questioning that. It's insane to me. It's insane, and it's not reasonable. So here's the question that we're going to answer on 53. It says, when we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? And this is the last choice. After this choice, it's about asking for power. So this is the second step choice, the second half of step two. And it's, I'm fearlessly going to face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. This isn't about how much God is, right? Like a quantity. This is about a relationship with and my reliance on that power. So it's about a relationship with God. So am I willing to have a relationship with God? Am I willing to rely on God in these areas of my life that we looked at in the bedevilments? Am I willing to rely on God in my personal relationships? Am I willing to rely and go for that power of my emotional nature? That's what it's about. It's not about how big or small God is in my life. It's what this pertains to is everything of me in the bedevilments, you know, what's inside of me. Am I willing to rely on God with all this stuff? And that half measures will avail as nothing. I think that's an important point here. Because we're working on a spiritual plane here. In the realm of the material, half measures will avail me half. But we're in the realm of the spirit here. Half measures have availed us nothing. So if I'm going to go for a half relationship with this power, I don't know that it's going to reveal me half. You know, it's got to be like, am I going all or nothing? And to me, the second step choice here is, do I want to live or do I want to die? Because there's only one must in this chapter. And it's, we must find a power greater than ourselves or else, right? Or else what, you know? Or else, what are my prospects for the future with drugs and alcohol? With the fire of step one on my ass, you know what I mean? What is that gonna look like for me? Is to drink and to use to die? Is my only option a spiritual way of life? And if that's my only option, and I believe that up to this point in step one, and then this is my only choice here, then really the choice is, do you wanna live or do you wanna die? And that's how I kind of look at this question, all right? A little glum, I guess. But it's true, you know, it's true. And, you know, there's lots of people that can do this stuff in the program and they could come to the program and do little bits and pieces. They can stay sober on meetings, and more power to you. I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? I just don't care anymore. It doesn't bother me. You say you want to be in the program and you're in the program, fine. You know what I mean? And you want to share and dump on a meeting, fine. I could choose not to go to that meeting if I don't want to, and that's up to me. You know, I don't need to tell people how they need to share, what they need to share, how their relationship with God is, how they need to pray, how they need to meditate. And it doesn't make me a better person either. I remember I dated an atheist, and he said, I don't fucking believe in God. I don't believe that there is a God. He's an atheist. So I would see him, and I was dating him, and I would see God all over his life. Who am I to say where God is and isn't? You know what I mean? That's about me and my consciousness. So for me to sit in judgment of other people and their sobriety and whether they have a relationship with God, I don't even give a fuck. You know, I'm too self-centered to even care anyway. What's really important to me is my relationship with God. It's my relationship with God that's important to me, because I'm going to die. They're not the ones that are going to have a needle in their arm. I am. You know what I mean? So all bullshit aside, I'm going to do this stuff that I need to do in the program, because this is a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But people will visit the program and say they're in the program, but they don't really even know what the steps are about. And I don't care. As long as they're sober and they're happy, fine. You want to work that step that way? You go on ahead, honey. But if you want me to take you through the steps, you're in for an awakening, you know, and you're going to do some fucking work. That's just the way it is. And you know what? And when I show them the book, I cut through a lot of the bullshit of people in the program, because once they see the BBA book and they see the transcribing and they see what I have to do, I'm like, here's my book. Oh, wait, hold on. Here's some extra pages, because they've ripped out, you know, and they're like, I'm not fucking doing that. No. Okay. Bye. Have a good day. You know, more power to you. My hat's off to you. I'm not going to sit in judgment of the people's relationship with God, and I'm not going to sit in judgment of their program anymore. And that's something for me. And you all can do whatever you want, but I'm glad you're here and you're listening. Okay. Sorry, I got on a little tangent. All right. Arriving at this point, we were squarely confronted with the question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason. Notice that reason is capitalized. Okay. They're talking about the God of reason. They're talking about me relying on my own reasoning, my own thinking, and that I'm God. Basically, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't tell you I'm God, but if God is who we are relying on, if that which we are relying on is God, then I've been God my whole life, you know? And my experience with me is a lot longer than my experience with trying to rely on a power greater than myself and trying to connect to that power. I've had a lot more time with self-reliance, okay? I've had a lot more time with self-reliance. So I try and cut myself some slack here, you know, when stuff comes up or oh God, I'm acting out, you know, just because I'm acting out. I mean, I went to the casino and I wasted $300. I'm not going to go through the steps because I think I need to go to Gamblers Anonymous. You know what I mean? It's just not the way it is. These are opportunities that come up for me to be able to rely on this power and experience that and then move through that. Every time a problem comes up in my life, I don't have to work the steps over it. I just don't. These problems come up for a reason, right? It's an opportunity for me to connect with this power and to rely on that power, not to freak out and rely on the steps. I don't believe that I'm here to be in a place where I'm constantly worshiping the steps, and we're about to get into that in the next page. Worship and how I live with faith and with worship, and how I'm always worshiping things, and I'm worshiping the fingers in the program, you know, worshiping the sponsor, worshiping the steps, the meetings, the commitment. I have to line up all my meetings before I go anywhere. I have to have a coffee commitment. Oh my God, I'm going to die. You know what I mean? And I'm worshiping this process, and I'm trying to keep myself sober through this process that way. And I've just discounted the whole thing, the whole program that's trying to take me to a power that will keep me sober and solve all of my problems. And here I have become the power, and I am God. And now I'm using the program to fix me. And then I'm fixing my relationship, and I'm telling him how he needs to be, where he needs to go, how he, because I'm a control freak. I know it. I am. I just am, you know? I am. I got to be in control. All right, hold on. We conduct the issue. Some of us are already, oh, I already read that. Bridge of reason toward the desired shore of faith. The outlines and the promise of a new land had brought luster and tired eyes of fresh courage and flagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out in welcome. This is a good description of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Mm-hmm. At least a Big Book Awakening. The Fellowship in Big Book Awakening has been beyond any other fellowship that I've experienced. I've never felt home in a fellowship like I did in the BBA. And that to me has meant more to me in my sobriety probably than anything. When I really experienced that side of the program, I really experienced it when I got into the Big Book Awakening. And just, I mean, sorry to put you on blast, I love you, but Tyler, any meeting I go to, even on the goddamn computer, you do the same thing. Hi, honey, how are you? I love you. You know, that means so much to a newcomer. And going into the meetings and experiencing that and having a fellowship around me of people that are actually making all their amends, they're actually meditating, they're actually doing the program the way the program is lined up, it changed my life. You know, it changed my life. We're grateful that reason had brought us so far, but somehow we couldn't quite step ashore. Perhaps we had been leaning too heavily on reason in that last mile, and we did not like to lose our support. That was natural. But let us think a little more closely. Without knowing it, have we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? Did we not believe in our own reasoning? Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? What was that but a sort of faith? Yes, we had been faithful, objectively faithful to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. We found, too, that we had been worshipers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, ourselves? And then with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us have not loved something or somebody? How much of these feelings, these loves, these worships had to do with reason? I don't think any relationship I got in had to do with reason. And I'll tell you this, the love of a mother goes beyond all reason. There was no reason for my mother to continue to love me through my addiction. Absolutely no reason. There's no reason that anyone I dated through my addiction should have still loved me. And I'd pull that fucking card. Excuse me, I'm cussing a little bit. but I'd pull that card out. I'd go into treatment, you know, and I'd have to be in treatment for a month or two or 3 months. Or I was supposed to be there 6 months, but I'd leave after two months anyway. And I'd pull that. No, I need to work on myself. I can't have any contact or communication with anyone. And all these people wanted to do was continue to love me after I treated them like shit and ran through their lives. And here I am pulling this, no, I have to work on my inner child card. Like, what an asshole. You know what I mean? What an asshole. And I had boyfriends wanting to come up and see me. My mom wanted to come up and see me. And I'm like, no, you know, no, I can't. I have to work on me. Like, just a dick. And their love never stopped. And I will say this. I know people get on people about enabling and stuff. If it wasn't for the enablement of the people in my life, I might have been dead today. You know, we run through the lives of tornadoes, and many of us wouldn't have homes if it wasn't for the love of the people around us. And I believe that enabling helped me. So God bless you, Al-Anons.
Great.
God bless you. I love you. I love you. All right. We found two even worshipers. Little or nothing we saw at last. Where were these things, the tissue of which our lives are constructed? Not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence. It is impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. The way I continue to trust self-reliance, even though it fails me, I've been living by faith in myself. Even though self-reliance has failed me, I will continue to trust it. I'll see this again in inventory, in my fear grid. Self-reliance fails, but I continue to trust in it because I trust me over anything. You know, even though it's not working, and this is like a limbo period. It's like a scary place to be. Even though I know I'm not going to, it fails me every time, I still deep down have this idea that there really isn't a God there to catch me, and that I'll still trust in myself over a power greater than myself. And that is something that's a practice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a practice. And I'm in this program to practice that. I'm in this program to practice a relationship that I've never had before. And it's still new to me. And it's work, you know? And I gotta work at it. And that's just what I think. That's what I believe. Just imagine life without faith. We're nothing left but pure reason. It wouldn't be life. But we believed in life. Of course we did. We couldn't prove that life had a sense that you can prove a straight line is the shortest distance between two points. Yet there it was. Could we still say the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons created out of nothing, meaning nothing, whirling on to the destiny of nothingness? Of course we couldn't. The electrons themselves seemed more intelligent than that, at least so the chemist said. Hence we saw that reason isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable. Though it emanate from our best minds. What about people who prove that man can never fly? Yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems. And I'm going to tell you, my experience has been the problems that I wrote down in like inventory or like in my life, in the bedevilments, the problems I thought I had in my life, the real problem wasn't even the problem. See, the real problem was in me. And I'm so grateful that the people that took me through this process brought everything back into inside me, you know, that I was the problem. And this idea that the problem was still outside of me, you know, having gone through this process and getting in through the fourth step, a fifth step, a sixth, a seventh step, I start to see that some of these problems, it says we rose above our problems. I feel like I rose above them on a spiritual plane rather than a material plane, because the problems I thought were here in front of me weren't even really the problem, right? That all that needed to change was in me and the problem disappeared. That the people about me were still acting the same way they were, and I thought I had problems with all these things around me, but really it was inside me, and when that changed, everything around me changed. Right? Because when my perception changes, my whole world changes. So I rose above those because they didn't even exist anymore. And that all happened through this process, through simple reliance upon God and getting to know through this process, you know, through the four step, through the steps. They said God made these things possible and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but like to tell ourselves it wasn't true. So here's, we're going to answer a few questions in this last page, and I'm going to wrap it up. In the next 5 minutes. Actually, we are fooling ourselves. For deep down, every man and woman and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, which is bad things that happen, by pomp, which is my ego, and by worship of other things. But in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. So, you know, this isn't new. This spiritual thing isn't new. It may be new to me, but it's not new. It's been around. And this idea of God inside me, it's always been there. I've always had it in there. And looking back, I can see I even had it as a kid, you know? And it has been blocked by calamity, by the bad things that happened in my life, by ego, by my perceptions, my conceptions, by the bad things that happened, worship of other things, the worship of power, the worship of drugs, the worship of people, the worship of money, my boss, my job, everything that has come into me, even sober, the gifts I've gotten sober, I started to worship and they blocked me from this power, right? It says, we finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as we have a feeling for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much as fact as we were. So this is how, I just answered it, we had to search fearlessly. This is how I'm going to find God. And notice in inventory, we make a searching and fearless moral inventory. They're using those words here. I'm going to search fearlessly, right? And then where I'm going to find God is we found the great reality deep down within us. And then there's a promise. It says, in the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. The last analysis. All my life, I've been looking for power in everything external, okay? They're telling me that the last place I'm going to look or have ever thought to look would be inside. And that through this process, if I search fearlessly inside me, I'm going to find God, which is great. Because if God is, the problem's in me, the solution's in me. And if the solution is in me, if God is in me, then I don't have to talk very loud or pray very loud to be heard. I don't have to make very big demonstrations to be recognized either. You know, the solution is in within, that God is within. I don't have to pray out to, this is my own thing. I don't have to look out towards, you know, the fourth dimension isn't out here. It's in here, rocketed within, you know, that this power is within. The last place I would look is where the power is, and it's within me. And this process is going to get me access to that. Through this unblocking process, what I'm going to see, the more I reveal me to me or through this process, the more I'm going to allow myself to be closer to God. All right. It says we can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly and encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. Another promise. There's so many promises in this chapter. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. This is the attitude that we looked at on page 50. there's three components to it. Sweep away prejudice, think honestly, and search diligently within myself. I can find God. This is the attitude that we looked at, right? In this book, you will read an experience of a man who thought he was an atheist. He's a minister's son. The next page, I'm going to wrap it up. He attended school church where he became rebellious at what he thought was an overdose of religious education. Business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide, these calamities in his immediate family embittered and depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, even more serious alcoholism, impending mental and physical collapse brought him to the point of self-destruction. I've lived here, you know. One night when confined in the hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known spiritual experience. Our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out, "If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question: is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong? While pondering the question, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came and crowded out all else. Who are you to say there is no God? This man recounts he tumbled out of bed to his knees. In a few seconds, he was overwhelmed by a conviction of the presence of God. It poured over him and through him with the certainty and majesty of a great tide at flood. The barriers he had built through the years were swept away. And I think that that's what this process is doing for me, that this chapter is doing for me. The barriers that I built up around this prejudice, this honest doubt prejudice about this relationship with this power, are being swept away. That's what the book is doing for me. That's what the first step has done for me. It just kicked the shit out of all that stuff and said, look, wake up, Joe. Wake up, you know. He stood in the presence of infinite power and love, and I have had that experience through the steps. He stepped from bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his creator and its promise. As our friend's cornerstone fixed in place, no later vicissitude has shaken it. His alcoholic problem was taken away that very night years ago. It disappeared. Save for a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of drink has never returned. And at such times, a great revulsion has risen up in him. Seemingly, he could not drink. Even if he would, there was no choice. God had restored his sanity. What is this but a miracle of healing? Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe. He humbly offered himself to his maker. Then he knew. Even so, God has restored us to all, as all to our right minds. And that's a good point. Tyler always says, put a question mark there. Put a question mark there. Toward sanity. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly, but he has come to all who have honestly sought him. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. My job as a sponsor is to get my sponsees to draw closer to God. That is their solution, not me. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Woo! Drop the mic. Woo, 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 woo. Great, Joe. Absolutely great. It's back to you, Joe.
I'm not going to call on people tonight. I'm going to let God be in control tonight. It's fitting for step two. I don't need to control tonight. Who wants to share? I'd like to hear from you all.
This is Donna.
All right, Donna.
Joe. I mean, I want you to come out here and live in Brooklyn. You can come right and stay in my house. But listen, there was a couple of things that, you know, I am just so grateful. But, you know, you use the car analogy. I use taking my computer to get repaired, and I go with the willingness to believe that it's going to be fixed. And it's so crazy how we have this honest doubt about God. And I always say an alcoholic and an addict can have a pole up their butt and a knife in their neck and say, maybe I got a problem. I mean, what does it take for us, right? And I also had the experience of feeling like I was on a cliff when I realized that my first time through the work that it was about letting go entirely. And it was my first honest prayer. And it was by way of a conversation. And it was like, God, I feel like I'm on the edge of this cliff and I'm about to jump. Are you going to be there to catch me? And that was my first real prayer. And I went to Catholic school for 13 years, including kindergarten. But I want to share my experiences with for the days that I contemplated, what if there is no God and all I have is me? And at first I was kind of uncomfortable even to approach that, because I have been on this path for 20 years. It was hard for me to believe that there was no God, but I only did it for 2 days, but I purposefully did not pray. I purposefully did not meditate. I had big book workshops those 2 days. I had someone else say the set aside prayer. I mean, I didn't want to go to God for anything. And the crazy thing is that I realized that even if I don't believe in God, God is still there because God kept revealing himself. I went on a bike ride and like two deer came across the path. I mean, I even saw beauty in fallen dead trees that were laying, that were dead around other foliage. And I saw the beauty in that. And then what really struck me, if there is no God, who do I thank? If there is no God, why would I be grateful? And when I looked at my prejudices towards God, it's more about my beliefs about God. Because sometimes I doubt that life, and I'm gonna just read it, that life is really very, very simple. I still doubt that. That life is really very, very simple. Peace and happiness is really what is important, and that and everything else that I've been striving for in my life, prestige, wealth, that's the lie. And it could be because I'm on this last chapter of my life. I always say that my runway is getting shorter and every mile needs to count, that my life has gotten so simple. And it's like, I'm at this point, really? Is this what it's all about? And I don't know why I still doubt that, because it is such a new way of being for me that it's really simple, Donald. You just have to be. So I looked at the bedevilment in what it would be without God and what it would be with God. And there is a big disconnect. There, my ideas don't work, and the God idea definitely does. I think it's so good for all of us to go through these bedevilments, because I really need to gauge where I'm at. Where am I at with God? And when I look at, is God everything or he is nothing? What I did, I wrote, is God, what is it? Is God everything to me? Is he nothing to me? Because everything, if God is everything, I'm not really turning everything over to God in every moment. And it's 20 years and I've been on this path and I still don't in the moment turn everything over to God. But like you said, Joe, it doesn't mean that I'm a bad person. It means that I'm a human being that has beliefs that have been ingrained in me. I see the truth in a lot of those beliefs, but my mind will still revert back to an old way of thinking, and I get to have an experience with that.
Time's up.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great share. Thank you.
Hi, Joe. It's Marie.
Hi, Marie.
Thank you so much. Hi, how are you? Thank you so much. I mean, that was absolutely amazing. And I mean, really just amazing. And, you know, I went through the questions too, and the bedevilments, you know, and it was really easy for me to pretend that there was no God, because like you talked about, Joe, I lived on self-will for so many years. And, you know, I was talking last night in a meeting about, you know, I would do things like I would go on a silent retreat for 7 days all by myself. And that would be great. Those 7 days would be beautiful. No phone, just me and God. It was wonderful. But then I'd come home and self-will took over again. So it's like, it was easy for me to realize. And I went through these bedevilments and, you know, everywhere. It's like, what are my personal relationships like without God? I can't do them. I literally cannot do them. I mean, I have never had a successful relationship with a man, ever, because I've never brought God into it. And when I showed up at BBA, I wasn't talking to anybody except my neighbor, who's like 4 feet across the hall. So I kind of had to talk to her. But I wasn't talking to anyone in AA. I was talking to people on the phone in AA. I was going to a phone meeting. And then, you know, I've got my emotional nature. What am I without God? I'm depressed. I'm angry. I'm really anxious. And I'm so afraid, really afraid. And with God, like I was telling one of my sponsees today that, like, the hamster wheel in my head has really quieted down. And the anxiety that I felt my whole life has diminished so much, like I barely feel it. And, you know, my relationship with my son and his wife was barely hanging on by a thread. And today, after being in AA and working through the steps and being in this workshop and seeing everything more clearly through your words and Tyler's words and prayer and meditation, my relationship with, I mean, they ask me over to their house more often than I want to go now. And I could never get an invitation, you know? And it's just, I mean, I thought the things that were important to me were my career and the car and the husband and the house. And I was miserable on my self-will. I was miserable. And, you know, today, when I'm believe that God is going to catch me, I don't have to be in fear. And so I don't have to act out. I was so grumpy on the phone with the Verizon rep, and I had to call back right away and apologize. I was just grumpy. I didn't want to do it. But today it's like I get this pang in my chest, like your day's going to not be good today, Marie. And it's like, okay, I got to make this right. And that's not what I, you know, before I would just bam, you know, I would fuck you up and say goodbye, you know? And that's who I am without God. That's who I am.
Time's up.
And I'm so glad that I'm learning, you know, slowly by slowly, how to be a different person with the help of God.
Awesome.
My name is Kimberly. I'm an addict and alcoholic.
Hi, Kimberly.
Hey, Jill. You are phenomenal, always. And I just always love your energy, your enthusiasm. I love it when you go down these rabbit holes. It's just always so real and funny. All of the shares have been amazing. Couple things that I want to say. Well, first of all, in terms of the homework assignment, what I found was that my life run on my self-will without God is basically I lie, cheat, and steal and call it working smart instead of hard. And I burn everything down. I burn every relationship down. I'm a runner. And so that said, one of the things that you talked about in this chapter, this last half, step two, when you were talking about how either God is or God isn't, what is my choice to be? And you said that you basically equate that to, do I want to live or to die? Because on my own self-will, I will use. And if I use, I will die. That's how that works. And so that just reminds me on page 45, when it says, we had to find a power by which we could live and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. That was the first time that equation hit me. And I felt it echoing there. Because on myself, well, again, it has to be a power by which I can live, because on my will, I will die. I've proven that to myself repeatedly. And then also on page 55, when it says, he was as much a fact as we were, we had found the great reality deep down within us. When it says great reality, that strikes me, because, you know, it starts. So I mentioned before that I'm a runner, and I do that in relationships. I do that with everything. I'm riddled on my self-will. I'm riddled with fear, and I want to run. That's just kind of what I do. And I remember there was a time a couple months ago, and I was wrestling with some delusions being smashed, and it was really uncomfortable. And I was talking to my sponsor, and I told her, I want to run. And she told me, what you're running from, you're running with. And I remember that every time I see this thing, we found the great reality deep down within us, because it said earlier in the book during step one that we were, you know, outright mental defectives in full flight from reality. I was in flight from reality, and here I see that reality was always within me. So what I was running from, I was always running with. And this is asking me to just stop fighting and face it. Just stop and sit and get quiet. It's the same thing my sponsor was telling me, just sit and get quiet. You know, you're running, you're burning all this energy and just behaving foolishly. Just stop. And so every time I read that, it just reminds me of that. And that's what I need to remember. So thank you. Awesome.
Thank you so much. That was great. Vanessa, I see your hand.
Hi, I'm Vanessa. I'm an alcoholic. I just resonate so much with what everyone has shared. And Joe, thank you so much. That was like, it's just really good. And this experience this time through, particularly these assignments this past 2 weeks has been so different for me. Like I really feel it. And maybe part of that is because this past year has allowed for me to have a like most amazing relationship with my higher power that I ever had before. Like I have one. and you know, I really, like I found, like what I'm hearing people say, it was very similar for me with the exercises, the messages that I got back. A lot of it had sort of a theme of being present, paying attention, self-care, like in that way of going slow, you know, and not, I really related Kimberly with the running. Like I'm like, go, go, go to stay, get away from being quiet with myself. And just to know that's, like that was the messages that I was getting. And the idea of creating space for that, for myself, for that purpose of growing my relationship with my higher power is such a, I mean, it's just so amazing to have those. I feel like I'm getting that message all week, like being told to me again and again. And I was thinking about that thing about the farmer. You know, the farmer doesn't grow things. The farmer like lays the soil and that's fertile, that so, you know, God can create something that grows. And I don't have to change me. I have to create that space, right? We do the 4 steps so we can clear out and excavate, so we have that space for God, right? So we can be connected to God, like that kind of messaging. And even, you know, it was this crazy thing that this happened with, there was like a bug on my curtains and it freaked me out and I didn't want to kill it because it was big and I was like gross, but I like managed to get my window up so I could shoot it out. But I never look at this window. I'm in New York and it's like, this is just a window it's a window I never go to. And there were mourning doves nesting, like a mourning dove nested, and it had 2 babies. And I would not have noticed that. I would not have seen that, you know. But prior to realizing all of that, at first I thought it was a pigeon. Screw pigeons, right? But like, but prior to realizing all that, I literally was sitting on my bed going, why are you doing this to me, God? Because there was this bug. I felt like I had to clean my whole apartment. I was just about to go to bed. Now I was going to be up all night. And it was one of those moments, right? And I literally sat there and I was like, God, why are you doing this to me? And I was like, and why am I thinking this way? Like, God is doing this to me. You know, I got a call from a sponsor. She's like, are you up? It was 12:30 in the morning. And normally I probably wouldn't have even looked at my phone, right? Who's texting me at this hour? And she needed someone to talk to. I said, yes, and I took the call. And it was like, that's why. I got off the phone and I said, okay, God, sorry. You know, you got it. And it was like, that was why, you know? And then to have this experience with these birds all week outside my window and seeing light and allowing for that space for life to happen, right? Just providing a window, you know, a windowsill. My brother told me to dump water on it. I didn't do that. But, you know, so I don't know. It was like all these things that happened this week that just kind of confirmed, you know, what we're doing here. And so I just wanted to share that because it just felt so big. And just sharing with Donna, even the other night, we just both felt so like just the experiences that we're having, and it's so great to hear from everybody else. And Joe, just thank you so much. That was really great tonight.
Great share. Thank you. Jessica, you want to share?
I thought I'd do a light hand gesture. Oh my gosh. Can you hear me? Okay. I have earbuds in and sometimes they're funny. Thank you so much. I just cannot believe in, you know, these couple months, which obviously parts of it felt quite arduous and long, but in the span of life is such a short amount of time that I started this workshop just not thinking at all, you know, that this was going to work, solve my problems, that I would not get this connection with God. And I'm sitting here practicing, you know, God is nothing or God is everything, and terrified of the God is nothing. And by the way, I'm so thankful that you had added that, and God is nothing, and I only have myself to depend on, because that's all I've been doing the last, you know, 3 years and a majority of my life. And it was like this terrifying experience. And I woke up and I didn't do prayer meditation and I went right into work. And it was just like this, I was just so full of anxiety. And this has been just such a beautiful experience seeing, you know, most of my life, I feel like I have to do everything perfectly and that I have to do this work perfectly. And I'm constantly looking at my answers like, is this the right answer? Like there's some answer book out there and I'm going to get quizzed on this later. And it's just been so beautiful to have this experience and see that, you know, God, I'm still building this relationship with God through these steps. My relationship will continue to grow as I nurture it and so that it doesn't have to be this like perfect step three. And I just absolutely love everything you said in terms of looking at I think it was the mechanic that really got me, and just simplified like how often I have faith in just things that are, you know, really unknown. And I had something else to say and I totally forgot. And it may come to me and I'll just text you about it later, but it really, really spoke to me. So thank you. And thank you everyone who shared tonight.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Hi, my name's Annette. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Annette.
Hi. Thank you so much, Joe. That was so incredible. And thank you, Donna. And I loved how Donna just said, you know, life is simple. So this is the third time I've been through this work. And these questions, 20, A, B, C, D, I've never understood it. And on one of them, on 20C, I put, you know, like, I don't even know what the question's asking. And you made it so simple, Joe. You said, and I wrote it twice in my book, you said, faith is the result of results. And then on the next page, I wrote at the bottom of the paragraph, faith is the result of results. That just made it so simple to me, because if you talk to me about electrons and girders and all this stuff, I've always been one of those people that if like, if I don't know it, I don't know it. I'm never going to learn it. I can't get it. So I've always read that part in the book, like, what are they talking about? Like, I'm not a chemist. I don't understand this and I don't really care. So I've kind of skipped over it. But the way you, and then I even wrote in my book here at the bottom of the page, I wrote, Joe told story about mechanic Pedro. Pedro fixed car, you know. So like, and I had to like write exactly what the story was because I'm old and I have a bad memory and I don't know that all, if I just wrote Joe Pedro, I wouldn't have remembered, you know? So I wrote it because you break it down so simple and that is what I need. You know, it's like those like four paragraphs that I've never in my life understood, no matter how many times I've read them, all you had to say was faith is the result of results. And it's like, yeah, that's exactly it. Cause there's so many things that I've had faith in, but prosaic none of that makes any sense to me. So thank you so much. I really appreciate the way you broke it down. And I loved how Donna just said, life is simple, because I complicate everything and I don't have to. Life is simple. Thank you.
Thanks, Annette. Robert?
Yeah, my name is Robert. I'm an alcoholic. I just this whole thing, I guess, through the all of step one and everything, you know, I got to the point towards the end of it where I didn't even want to do it anymore. And just like, do I really need to do this again? And, you know, getting to the end of it and then going into step two here. And am I willing to look at my honest doubt and prejudice? You know, am I willing to take those considerations further? You know, I really get stuck. You know, a couple of them that I, you know, there's a part of me and it, I can't just make it go away, but it's like a feeling that God doesn't want things for me, that I need to struggle. Things need to be difficult. I have to do things in order to get you know, approval or God to be there with me. And I think just this exercise where we put the 10 most important relationships down, I had quite an experience with it. And I was talking with Tyler about it before the workshop. And because that's just a little piece for me. I didn't believe that was going to work, but I get it. And that was a level of, you know, conscious contact that I've never experienced before. And some of the answers that I got, like for instance, with personal relationships, you know, these aren't for me to fix, you know, a couple of these are, you know, brothers that I have that are struggling in one way or another. And, you know, one of them, the answer I got was, you know, Colton is in my hands, just wait and see, you know. And I don't know, I would have never thought of that, because I think I need to help him with money, or, you know, I need to step in and help him with his car or whatever it is. And I just get so wrapped up in these things. And I feel like if I'm not doing those things for other people, that God's not happy with me. And then I twist it all around in my head again. And it's like, you know what? God's got this, you know. I'm definitely having an experience with all of this. And there's going to be a new level, you know, to my recovery and my relationship with God. And I think I'll just leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you. Great care. Mariana, you awake?
Morning. I'm just awake. Yeah. Thank you very much, Joe. That was, oh, it was brilliant. And something Vanessa said, like, really just really got to me about the dove, because I've been speaking to Jose recently about God and all this stuff, that all these old ideas that I had, and we talked about when the dove came down, and this is just, I know this isn't anything to do with what we're talking about tonight, but the dove came down in Jesus as a symbol of God and his love, and then God's voice shouting out, like, this is my son and who I'm, you know, I'm really pleased. And then Vanessa shared tonight about the dove sitting outside her window, and I just loved that, and that God is there. That is a symbol of God, and because I couldn't talk like this before, because God meant pain and punishment, and there's a fiery pit waiting for me, and because I'm a gay woman, I'm going to that hell, and there's no way, I'm not going to escape it. And I've lived with that fear for years, and doing the exercise this week of God is everything when he's nothing. Well, for me, God, if God was nothing, I wouldn't even be here. There would be no life. There would be nothing. Like, there would just be nothing. Suddenly this realization that if the God was nothing, there would be nothing. And then if God was everything, it was an amazing experience, because suddenly God, my life would be so different. It'd be bright. It'd be lighter. It would be full of fun. I'd be happy. I'd have connections with people. I would not be bitchy, I would not be gossiping, I would not be moaning, I'd be completely different attitude, and not once did this fiery pit or punishment come into it, not once. And it was a real God isn't the way that I thought he was, and that was a really an incredible experience, because I'm 54 now, and most of my life I have carried this real burden that God is a punishing God. And by doing the exercises and all the different bedevilments, it made me realize that God is nothing in my life. He's not in any part of my life. I don't even know if he's in the part where I'm not drinking and I'm not eating and throwing up. I don't even know if he's in that. But he's not in any part of my life. So it was absolutely mind-blowing to think there is no God in my life. There's no personal God to me, like Bill W. No personal God to me. And so things have been changing. And in the last week, it's been an incredible experience. My partner and I got down on our knees and prayed together about our relationship. I never thought that would ever happen. And there's been amazing things happening. And I became really convicted of the fact that my partner pays all the credit card debts, and I've just let her pay the credit card debts because I didn't want to use my money when she was happy to pay it. But she was really stressed about just trying to get these debts cleared off. And our credit card debts was down to like £3,300 or something. And I was really convicted of the fact that I've got money that I could have paid all of that off, and then that would have taken pressure off everybody. So took it to God, and between us went to speak to Evie, and we cleared off the credit card debt. And the very next day, a cheque came completely out of the blue for £3,380. This never happens to me. I'm one of these people that hear at meetings that people went to the courts to hand themselves in for things that they did, and all their convictions were wiped away. I would be the sort of person that would go to court and I'd end up in prison. Like, nothing ever really happened. None of these things ever really happened for me. And here I am, and it's like, wow, that's incredible. So it's like you were saying about, I can't remember how you said, the result of the results. It's like by actually doing the things that I feel convicted of doing them and facing them and seeing them through, things are changing. And I really love that. But I got a real fright tonight because I was reading this, a wee article tonight about deprogramming people from 12-step fellowships. And I got a fright, and I'll need to speak to my sponsor about it, but it's kind of sitting in my head, and there's a fear, and I don't know how to get rid of that fear. So anyway, but I'll leave it there, and it's lovely to see everybody, and thanks everyone for their shares.
Thank you so much. Who's next?
Helen at it.
Helen.
Hello, VBA family. Thank you so, so much, Joe. I'm getting so much out of going through this process, and I identified with your share and everyone who shared thereafter. Joe, you said some really, really powerful things tonight. One of the main things that really stuck out to me is being conscious of when we're taking a newcomer through the work of allowing them to have their own experience, even though we've had our experience, we know what it takes, but having to have that consciousness of not putting what we believe on them, which can, you know, push them away. And I have to say this, and I shared this with Tyla, and I've shared it with Kylie and with Felicia, coming in as a minister from the church last week was just amazing to be able to really set aside my prejudice about the fellowship and the process, because I was so prejudiced that you guys didn't have anything to offer me. What could you possibly offer me? And so I was sharing that because people knew my title in community. When I came into the fellowship, they really didn't think that I, the addict, I ain't talking about no title. Okay, Joe, I love your rawness. The addict really didn't need 1, 2, and 3. And being here and having this real new experience with 1 and 2 thus far has just been mind-blowing, some of the revelations that I'm receiving. And so the first time I ever went through the work, every time we would go through it line by line, I knew the scripture where that derived from. I knew where that came from. And so learning the language of the fellowship and being able to mesh both of those together for it to make sense. Like, I'll give you an example of when you were going over sanity versus insanity. And so the Holy Spirit, God, whatever you want to call it, for me it's the Holy Spirit, revealed to me that insanity is my flesh, is believing in my flesh. It's the disease to make me think, to believe the lie that I can count on my flesh when my flesh will kill me to death. I can never feed my flesh enough. Flesh equals the disease. And that's the insanity for me. And the sanity part is the spirit which will lead me, which will guide me. And so this week in doing the exercise, that's what my exercise was all about. Am I believing and leaning on my flesh, which is a liar? And I equate that to my disease, to my addiction. It's always going to tell me a lie. It's never going to lead me to the truth. And so is God anything, everything, or if God is nothing? The God is nothing part, Joe, it really showed me how much what life would really look like if God was nothing. There's no direction. There's no person to lean on. There's no person to cry to. There's no person to listen to. There's just you. It's like being in a dark room and there's no light. That's how it came to me. And then with God being everything, you know, I got a friend. I got somebody I can trust. I have somebody that is there for me, that is never going to leave me, that is never going to forsake me, that is always there no matter what. And when you gave that example about the enablers, that I equated that with God, because no matter what, he doesn't turn his back on me. He doesn't leave me. He doesn't forsake me. He's always there. I cannot push this God thing away. And that's how I equate when it says deep down inside of every man, woman, and child, there is the fundamental idea. No matter how much drugs I do, no matter how much sex, lies, cheats, steal, whatever, he's there. I can't make him go away. And so the last thing I'm going to say is that the fear of releasing my flesh, and you hit it, Joe, when you said, I've been with my flesh much longer than I've been in this spirit world. And so every time I try to say, okay, flesh, you sat down. I'm going to depend on God. I'm going to rely on God. I'm going to let God do it. My flesh wears up like, no, you're not. Who do you think you are? You know me. You don't know this spirit. You don't know. How can you trust that? And so there's that underlying of fear and trust to let go of what I know, what I've been walking with, what has worked for me, what has protected me. And it's like, am I willing to let that go, that prejudice aside, and really, really give the spirit life a try? And so I'll just end it with this. And it's just been so big for me. It's like having this form of God, but not a reliance on God. You know, it's, I got all his knowledge. I can do this and I can do that and tell you all that. But deep down inside, where is the real reliance? It's not on spirit, it's on flesh. And so you guys, I am just so, so grateful. I too, Joe, I've never felt this comfortable in 12-step fellowship. I just feel so comfortable in the workshop in BBA, not feeling like I'm prejudiced, being judged because I came from church and not necessarily where everybody else came from. And it's just beautiful to have that acceptance and to have the experience that, you know what, you're just human. You know, you're experiencing your humanness, and everything else is being peeled back. So thanks for letting me share.
Great, Cher. Thank you. Thank beautiful you. Shares. Are we done, Tyler? Or we have time for one quick one?
Well, I have to give a homework assignment. We're so done. If you want one quick one,
no,
you can have it. I just don't want people to get off the call.
It's 10:29. I think we'll wrap it up. We'll wrap it up here.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone. Great chairs tonight. And so we're done with step two. Woohoo! Step two is done. Moving on to step three. Tyler, you want to take it over?
Thank you, Joe. What an incredible share tonight. It was so great. You're amazing. And I'm so honored to do this with you because I love you so much. And you're fabulous. Not only are you brilliant on the work, you're funny as hell. And you just, the passion you have is contagious, you know, and I'm catching the fire. I'm catching the fire, baby. I'm catching the fire. I'd like to tell you a couple things. You know the exercise that all of you did on the bedevilments, where you ask God what the trouble is, and then you ask God what the solution is. I want you to either fold that up and put it on page 85 in your big book, or put a sticky on page 85 in your big book that gives you, reminds you to look at the bedevilments, because those two exercises are a glimpse into what God's gonna do in 4 through 9 in your life. And when you get to step 10, I want you to look back at that and see what has happened in your life, because you have now just peeked through the keyhole and you will see what God's gonna do. Okay. Secondly, Robert, I wanted to point this out because it was so pertinent. You know, when you were sharing tonight, Robert, I was hearing you share that you have some self-defeating beliefs around the God idea. And we are going to look at self-defeating beliefs that become principles in our life in step 4. And you may see some, and the people I've worked with have already started some, because as you have more time in the program, you will probably inventory self-defeating beliefs more than you will resentments of people, places, and things. And Robert, what I heard you say is, I have to earn God's love.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a self-defeating belief. And if you want to write that down, and then you can inventory it in step 4, and you can get a lot of truth and a lot of freedom, because that is an old idea for so many of us, because that's what we learned as children, that I have to work for my parents' love. My parents' love was not unconditional. My parents' love was conditional, and I had to earn my parents' love, and that we transfer that to God. And, you know, you may have self-defeating beliefs of, you know, I'm too defective to ever be loved. I'm too old to be in a relationship. These kinds of beliefs that haunt us, we will inventory them when we get to 4-step. Okay. So anyone have any questions on those things? Okay. Also, I suggest that you bring a candle next week.
for the third step, a candle that you can sit on the counter of where you're sitting, because it's nice to have the candlelight. We're going to do an extended meditation. Because I don't think any of you have done step three the way I do it, except Joe and Rick. And
me.
Oh, and Kylie. Is that Kylie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Kylie. Sorry, baby. Yeah, you've done it. Anyway, so please bring a candle. And that's it. Does anyone have any questions? You know, I'm available if you have any questions, and I will make sure everyone gets the text that I sent out a text concerning starting this week to download what you need on assignment in your sponsorship guide. On assignment 13, in your sponsorship guide, assignment 13 has all the downloads for the fourth step. And usually I give it on next week, but I wanted to give it a week early so you had an extra week to download everything. And so I sent out a text, and all of you should get it. If you don't get it by tomorrow afternoon, please let me know. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Wow, we love you, Tyler.
Thank you, Tyler. All right, mm-hmm. everyone.
Thank you, Tyler.
Kylie.
Mm-hmm. Tyler, thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
I Kylie, love you guys.
Will you close us with the serenity prayer, Kylie?
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Love ya.
God. Grant me the serenity. The courage to remain. And the wisdom to know the difference.